Well, thank you to those who sent a question via text. We're going to answer a few of those first, and then there'll be an opportunity if you want to ask something from the floor. First question. I chose not to vaccinate my child with the rest of his year group for HPV, given that it is transmitted by sexual activity, as I didn't want to send him the message that I expected him to engage in marital sex. Premarital sex, it is. Typo. I discussed this with him. What are your thoughts on this, Patricia?
It's not my area of expertise. Are we all right on that? Are we all right on that?
We're back on, Sam.
Shall we just share this? Are we all right?
You back? Yep.
He says all right.
All right.
Okay. It's probably run out of battery or something, whatever. Anyway, it's not my area of expertise, but what I would say is that, look, we sort of tend, at the beginning, it was all about, oh, you know, this is because everyone's having sex early. But the reality is that, you know, if your kid was to stay celibate and remain celibate through life, he or she would never have sex. But if the kid gets married, you really don't know what the history of the person they're having sex with. So, you know, it doesn't matter. Because now it's a protective thing, and it's just one of those immunizations that is part of the, you know, the set of immunizations that are being done. So I think the important thing is not the giving permission for the vaccine being the message that you approve of premarital sex. That message should have been actually given a long time before in your discussions of your values and your pointing to the biblical truth. What do you think, Rod? What do you think about that?
She said she wouldn't do this to me, but I knew she would. Look, I think it's a question of trust and communication with your children. And yes, you're not giving permission. You're not giving approval. You're opening a conversation, I think. That's what I would say.
Thank you.
Next question. Here we go. We as parents are good at talking to our teenagers, but sometimes they are not keen to listen. I know you said have a backup plan, aunt or uncle, but that's not always practical in our case. Any suggestions to help them listen, participate and stay in the room when we're in a talk?
Okay. Well, we were talking about this when we were reading the questions, and it was amusing that it started by saying we are very good at talking. I said, are you just as good as listening? So the important thing for your kids to know is that you are there for them. And being there for them means that they need to recognize that you are listening, that you are aware of what's happening in their life. And that needs to be established really, really early, that you're keeping the communication channels open. You know, it's about looking for teachable moments. It's not always easy to say, okay, we are going to have the sex talk today, sit. But there's teachable moments all around you. Television shows, a pregnant cat, you know, start early, a pregnant neighbor. And all cats are neutered now, aren't they? You can't find a pregnant cat now. Sorry, I grew up in a place where cats actually got pregnant. So the reality is that there's billboards. I don't know whether you guys, I don't know how the Westfield here is, but your closest one. But Parramatta Westfield has this huge center screen, which is advertising 50 Shades Darker. And the advertisement says, fairy stories have dark endings. So even the advertisements are about, you know, it opens up conversations. So you're walking with your kid through that. What is that, Mom? You've got to talk to them about, you don't have to talk to them immediately about BDSM or something, but you get to open up, talk communications. So opening up communication at different times around the dining table or newspaper articles. Just find things rather than the stay in the room and talk. So listen to them, be aware, ask them about everyday things and use teachable moments.
You're going to give me the wisdom. Microphone again, aren't you?
Wisdom.
One of our conversations, I won't mention which one of our children, we've got three boys, I can say it was a boy, but talking about taking opportunities, we were after cricket training, we were walking across the oval and walked past some bushes and he saw a used condom and he said, "Dad, what's that?" And so we talked for about 15 minutes from there and it was just a natural conversation. It was a legitimate question and it was a question that we just talked about and used that as an opportunity. So I agree with what you're saying in terms of take the moments when they're there. You've got to create some too sometimes. Next one. Do you recommend using apps that block access to content or ones that monitor what is accessed so you can have a conversation about it? Our family currently uses Covenant Eyes. What do you think is appropriate for various ages?
Covenant Eyes site, as well as I told you, the Common Sense Media and Internet Safety, all those sites give you different and different methods of both accountability. Covenant Eyes is also largely an accountability software which tells you what the kids are watching or, you know, tells you what anyone's watching, your accountability partner. And then there are the blocking. So there's blocking software and there's accountability software. You can use both. You can use anything. But a couple of important things. First thing is you don't do it without discussion with the kid. There needs to be the trust and education and discussion and communication before you put in the technological blocks. Can you see the difference there? It's not like the legalistic, I'm going to do this because you might be bad and, or you've been bad and I'm going to do this, but rather, you know, let's talk about what's happening in the world. Let's talk about porn. Let me tell you about the dangers of porn. And now let me help you by doing this. You see the difference there? So yes, by all means, use whatever you have to, but underpin it and undergird it with the foundation of communication and education and discussion with your kids.
What is the difference between lust and the desire for sex? You mentioned before that the desire for sex is natural and okay.
This is something I talk quite a bit with young people because we need to be aware that kids, be careful that kids don't feel guilty about just feeling sexual feelings. I mean, none of us, all of us need to be aware that, you know, a kid, a young person, your hormones are sort of raising through you. You become a ball of hormones all of a sudden and you look at someone and you go, whoa, cute, especially when they're wearing something that shows the cleavage and their butt cleft. So, you know, and you go, cute. Now, we mustn't let our kids think that that immediately is a horrible thing. It's chemistry. It's that simmering sexual feeling. So letting our kids feel that, you know, you're likely to have these feelings. You know, even little kids, when they see porn, if somebody shows porn to a six-year-old, the body responds. We are created that way, that sexual activity, naked, nudity, just makes our body respond. And if nobody has taught the child that that's likely to happen, it's a scary thing to happen. So we must recognize that our kids can feel that way. But lust is when I teach the kids that when you take that thought, you see a girl or you see a boy and go, oh, cute. But when you take that thought into the bathroom and masturbate to it and build a fantasy around what you might do, then the thought, that spark of desire becomes a lustful fantasy, a lustful thought. There lies the problem. There lies the what Jesus called the sin. Can you see the difference there? And our kids need to understand that because the desire is a spark. The lustful thought is an action. And remember what I said, behavior is a choice. We need our kids to understand emotions, feelings can happen. Behavior is a choice. Teach our kids to choose. But then just talking about masturbation, can I talk about masturbation for a minute? Okay. It's a question that often young people ask, and you know, parents also like to know, what about masturbation? And I tell young people, you see, masturbation is no big deal really. All you're doing is touching your genital because it feels good, and God made genitals to feel good because He wanted us to have sex. If it was the most boring thing to do, we would have stopped procreating. So the point is, He made it fun, and so it feels good. Now if it felt good to rub our nose, we'll all be sitting here rubbing our noses, but it doesn't feel that good. So we tell kids that, you know, it's not the action that matters, but it's the thoughts that go with it. And, you know, some people say, I can masturbate watching the sunset or the wind through the gum trees or, you know, but that's unlikely. Usually it's lustful thoughts. So we talk about, you know, the thought, the desire and the action. And we talk about lust. Then we talk about how masturbation can be habit forming. You know, you can, because masturbation is a relaxing act, orgasms relax you, then you think, oh, I can't sleep, I masturbate, I'm sleepy, I masturbate, I'm tired, I masturbate, mom's had a fight with me, I masturbate, my husband's pulled me up for not, or my wife has pulled me up for not taking the garbage out, I think I'll masturbate. So, you know, what happens is masturbation becomes the panacea, like taking a Panadol to everything. So take the Panadol instead. Don't let it become a habit. And that's something we need to talk to our kids about. So I tell them, look, if you masturbated a couple of weeks ago and you're sitting in class feeling really guilty, don't feel bad about it. But don't make it a habit. So we need to talk about it to our kids. And of course, if you're masturbating to porn, that just sets that wiring in your brain. It like seals the wiring. The pornified wiring in the brain gets sealed when you masturbate because it sets those chemicals going.
We've moved away from the text now, so it's over to you. If you have questions you want to ask, just put a hand up. And before you answer, I'm just going to repeat the question because we're going to record tonight, so that way it'll pick it up on the recording. So the question is, in terms of pornography, what about a young child, you know, aged up to 5 or so, how would you actually talk with them about pornography?
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up, because today what we say is you've got to be talking about porn with your kid before they go to primary school. That's the reality, because the rate of kids who are being shown pornography is rising exponentially in primary school. We are seeing child-on-child sexual abuse in primary schools, and a lot of it is being attributed to these kids having been shown porn or some way finding pornography. So what do? Basically, you teach them at an age-appropriate level, which is what? You say something simple like, if somebody shows you something where there are people without clothes doing something that makes you feel ew or icky and your body feel all uncomfortable. So teach them, one, what it is at an age-appropriate level. What is it and how it might make you feel? You may feel yucky. You might feel even interested. And your body might feel all sort of squeezy when you see it. So what is it? How might you feel if you see it? That's the first thing to teach your child. Second thing is, what then should you do? Then teach your children, if you see it yourself accidentally. I talked to a year 6 kid who said, I was looking for a project for cute pussycats. Ended up at a porn site. So, and of course, when you see something and it says, are you 18? What do you think a 6-year-old would do? Yes, of course I'm 18. What happens when I'm 18? So you get into a porn site. So tell them that if you accidentally see it or somebody shows you, what should you do? Teach them that, role play it. I'm not saying show it to them, but tell them, what should you do? You say, this is not good, or I don't want to see this. So say something. I say, name it and shame it. Say, I don't like this. I don't want to see it. So what is it? Understand what your body responds, how you feel. 2, what should you do immediately? So I don't want to see this. Run away. So I don't want to see this. Run away and talk to an adult, a parent or a teacher immediately. Because what happens is, these images can get fixed in the kid's brain and they get very, very traumatized, some children. It's very frightening. There's one kid whom someone once schooled, they were talking to me about a little 7-year-old girl who had been shown a picture of a man having sex with a donkey. She needed psychological treatment because she couldn't sleep, she couldn't eat, she was feeling nauseous, and she couldn't tell anyone because she thought something was wrong with her for having seen this. So it took a lot of time and work. So you need to prepare your kids by saying, what is it? How's your body responding? How are you feeling? What should you do immediately? Say, this is not good. I don't like it. Run away. And debrief by talking to someone. And at that time, if you're the one they are talking to the child, what you do is you distract. And distract by, remember, emotional brain, control brain. For little ones, in the books we are now writing, which is called Starting Up, Starting Off by the Book. So by the Starting Up books we are writing, there's one booklet on pornography. And what we say is, we call the brain instead of emotional and control brain, we call it the feeling brain and the thinking brain. And we tell parents, you know, you got to train your child to bring the thinking brain into action. So when if your child sees porn, you need to tell the child, you know, comes to you, you need to distract and tell them to do something else. Bring the thinking brain into action to take those thoughts away. So it's fairly clear. And so the book, when we have it out in May, hopefully we'll have that. Okay. Is that clear?
Have you got any comments regarding what kind of intimacy is appropriate for young people and adults who are in a committed relationship but not married?
So a dating committed relationship. Yeah, dating committed relationship. That's an interesting question, isn't it? Because the moment somebody is committed, we sort of automatically think there must be sex. You know, can you be in a committed relationship and still not be sexually intimate? Isn't it a fascinating culture where we think that close, intimate relationships must equal sex? Can you have a close, intimate relationship which does not involve sexuality? Can you have a dating relationship where you're planning to get married and still have a boundary that says we will not be sexually intimate? Then immediately the question is, but then where do you draw the boundary? Do you draw it at your waistline, or do you draw it at the neckline, or do you stop from kissing, or do you not kiss? The answer is not to be legalistic. The answer to me as a sexologist and biologist, of course, goes back to looking at the science. And I tell young people and older people, it is about arousal. You need to be aware, if you are sexually aroused and you are in a situation where you are in, okay, you are, firstly, you're in love. Remember what happens when you're in love? You're dopey, obsessed, you're not thinking straight, you're under the influence. So that's your state. Now, in that state, you're trying to make decisions as to what to do. You get sexually aroused. You need to know what sexual arousal is. Now, you, I'm assuming, know it. But for young people, we need to explain that sexual arousal for a boy is easier to recognize because they have a carry around a barometer which tells them what arousal is. For girls, it's not that simple, but you do know that your genitals get sort of woohoo and get, you know, a bit warm and tingly and, you know, moist, and you know you're aroused. When you are in a state of arousal, under the influence of being in love, it is hard to make the boundary decision of, I think we will stop now. So don't put yourself in a situation where you have the opportunity or the temptation to go beyond just kissing or. And that's what we need to explain to our children. In Teen Sex by the Book, we talk clearly about what is arousal. It's not about saying that's the boundary or that's the line, but rather it's saying, if I'm aroused, then I need to step back, because if I keep going, I'm going to find it harder and harder to actually stop. So it's that conversation. But in younger people, we also need to talk about, okay, there's firstly where you draw the boundaries and to recognize when you're aroused. The other thing is to be very clear about what is dating when two people go out. When I was growing up, date came in packets in the supermarket shelf. But the point is that when you're dating, is it about satisfying yourself? We go back to that individualistic, am I in it to get something out of it? Or am I dating to look at you and say, I love you? Does it I love you mean? Does it mean I love you because you give me the best feeling and the best orgasm? Or do I love you because I want to honor you? You have become precious to me and I want to honor you. Is my love me oriented or other oriented? And if you're dating and your love is becomes me oriented and I want pleasure, you're not going to make marriage. Because marriage is walking beyond the emotional phase when the dopamine has not gone off completely, but pretty much gone off the peak. And then love becomes an action, a continuing action. And if kids and young people who are dating don't understand that, it's really hard once you get married. I can go on forever about this, but that's another talk.
I'd like to make a comment on that too, particularly in regards to teenagers. I think there's some thinking around that says you only go out in groups and then, you know, even though you're keen on someone and you just go out as a group, you don't go out as a couple, and then you come suddenly find yourself moving from this group to, well, I think we like each other, we don't really know, we haven't been out together, but, you know, and suddenly it's this acceleration through, and I think it's quite appropriate. You know, we need to be careful with temptation, but we also need to learn self-control. We need to recognize that volcano you talked about can actually be contained, and we can go out as a couple and get to know each other one-to-one and develop that friendship in a special way, given the what you're talking about in terms of putting those boundaries in place. So there's one more question here. What are some useful strategies for youth leaders to work with and communicate with parents and kids and work within the boundaries set by parents? Let me read that again. What are some useful strategies for youth leaders to work with and communicate with parents and kids and work within the boundaries set by parents?
I'm not sure
What are useful strategies for youth leaders to work with? So I guess part of the question is youth leaders communicating with parents and also with the children and trying, I think, to establish what are helpful boundaries to work within together.
I think one of the things now, I'm not sure whether I'm really answering what you're asking, but I think one of the important things is to get parents involved, isn't it? Is to get parents involved in what you're doing. I know it's hard, especially, you know, for youth groups today with all this thing about abuse and boundaries. But to get parents involved in what you're doing, and maybe clearly, I mean, I'm thinking back to churches I've been with and youth leaders I've talked to, and some youth leaders clearly invite parents in to talk about what topics they're going to cover. So if they decide they're going to cover pornography and, you know, dress and modesty and something about, I don't know, same sex or whatever, they bring the parents in and they inform them what they're doing so that parents are informed. And, you know, other youth groups, again, I'm not doing the sales talk here, but some say youth leaders have said that they use teen sex by the book, and so they tell the parents, this is a book we are using, it's available in the church library if you want to see it, and that's the information. So there's techniques that different youth leaders use. Have you, anyone have any contribution to that, or yourself, Roger, or Lee?
What I'd like to do is get Lee to stand up at this point. And if you haven't met Lee, Lee's our youth minister, and give him a clap. It's a good opportunity, I think, Lee, for you this is unashamedly a plug for youth ministry at All Saints, but just give a run through briefly on Fridays, what happens with starting with Zone and a little bit of background to that.
Hey everyone, yeah, I'm Lee. We have groups for kids who are in years 5 and 6, and that runs on a Friday afternoon from 4 to 5:30. And then for year 7 to 9, there's Junior Fresh. Is that? It's not working. There it is. For Junior Fresh. So year 7 to 9. And then also just after it is Senior Fresh, which is for years 10 to 12. I don't know. There was a question about what happens if your auntie and uncle, like, it's not convenient to have that other person there to talk to. Youth leaders are amazing people to talk to because they spend every week with them. They're teaching them from the Bible. They're sharing their life with them, their struggles. They've just walked through those years as well. So they've got, like, good advice. Hopefully they're communicating with the parents as well. So I think, you know, sending them along to All Saints Youth is a great idea. Yeah, plug.
Just next Monday night, Lee is running a night which is called Youth Ministry Explained, just to connect with parents and explain the thinking behind the youth ministry, what it's trying to achieve. If you've got teenagers or younger ones that don't go, we've already heard tonight there's lots of benefits. They will get Christian teaching, but things like questions of identity, big question, and they get the opportunity to think that through. And what Lee was saying too about role models, a number of the leaders are here tonight and they are great role models for the younger generations. You know, as a parent, you lose a certain amount of control and kids start to listen elsewhere other than mum and dad. You want to keep that relationship, but they are influenced by other relationships, and what better to have a generation or two ahead of them, giving them great messages and getting alongside them and loving them, caring for them, listening to them. So that's happening. Another thing that happens actually too is that each year the youth group have a Bring Your Family night. It's called Bring Your House, Bring Your Family, Bring Your House. And that's the idea of bring your family along, whoever your family consists of, bring them along, and because as church want to get to know them. And that also opens communication on that night, introduced to all the youth leaders. So that communication is then open for parents. So at any time, they can always contact and get info from parents and talk through issues. You might want the youth minister to be aware of something particular for your child. And Lee's always available for that. That's enough of a plug. Thanks, Lee. No more on the phone. We've got time for probably two or three more. Scott. Okay, young children, and talking about internet porn, how do you approach that subject without arousing in them a curiosity to find out and go and look themselves?
That's an interesting question, because it immediately raises this issue that we keep getting asked, you know, should we be teaching our kids about sex? Wouldn't it make them curious and make them want to go and search for things? Every bit of research says it works the other way around. Kids who are informed early by sources they trust will not go searching. I've had kids who have said that they've been talked to their parents, they go and somebody shows them porn and they go, eh, big deal. I know about that, I'm not interested, it's not good for me. So you are the informer, you are the educator, they don't have to go elsewhere. So it does not make them go search, because you've told them what it is, and then finally, really, it is their decision. But you teach them, you know, you're there for them, and then you keep the communications open. So they won't go, they don't go search for it just because you talk to them. The curiosity will happen because other people talk to them, and then they can say, look, I know what you're talking about. There's a young man who, when he was 8 years old, was very well educated by his parents, and we in Sri Lanka, he went to school, and somebody used the F word on him, and he promptly called that boy classmate to a side and explained exactly what it meant. Probably traumatized that other boy out of his life. But, you know, I'll tell you another little story to lighten things up. I guess I'd talk like this one day, and I said how the first thing that you do with children is to make sure they know the right words for the body. Like your son has a penis and a scrotum, not Willie and Kevin or whatever it is. And I had a client who called it Kevin for 10 minutes. And I thought he was gay and he was talking about his boyfriend till I realized it was talking about his anatomy. And then, and your girl, your daughters have vagina and vulva. Now, I had a parent who contacted, who I met later on at a church, and she said she went and told her little boy, and then she had a call from the preschool teacher who said, your son in the playground said that he had a penis. And so this very wise mother said, oh, really? What do the other boys have? I mean, you know, so it's fine if they're educated and they say they have a penis, so they have a penis, just like they have a nose or a toe or whatever. So it's okay. It is okay, really, for your kid to say, look, we discuss pornography at home. So what? You discussed it with your parents. More power to you. So if we are the ones who are embarrassed, not our children. See, we are the ones who need to be open and discuss, and then the kids will keep coming to us.
I've heard many names used before, but never Kevin. That's a first. Another question?
So like if those days it was the magazine behind the garden shed or the school shed. But again, it was a curiosity factor that was brought from the peers. Now, there was a child who already knew that these magazines of nude people were not good. They'll go, who cares? Who wants to see nude pictures? I know about that. So that, because your kid is already knowledgeable about it.
I think we're going to wind up there. There'll be an opportunity to talk with Patricia as we finish this evening. I wanted to also mention a course coming called Families Equip. It's a 5-week course on a Monday night starting the 27th. It's for parents with any age children. Leaflets at the back. Anne Cunningham is the facilitator of the course. And it's an Australian-based course, well worth attending. Take a flyer. The cost is $50 over 5 Mondays. So you can take one of those with you and have a look and see if that's something you'd like to do. Also remind you that Patricia's books are there on the table, so you can purchase those if you'd like to tonight. And tonight has been recorded, so if you want to listen to it again, there was a lot of information coming. If you want to sit and absorb it, then you can go to our church website. And if you go to our church website, then you'll be able to find it under the podcasts. So that's there for you as well. So thank you for attending tonight. I'm sure you'd like to express your appreciation to Patricia, so let's just give her a round of applause.